the America's Jobs Team podcast. For economic developers, by economic developers. Join the Consultant Connect team every Tuesday and Thursday for discussions surrounding the latest in our industry.
Learn from fellow economic development heroes, get leadership advice, keep on top of industry trends and shifts, and so much more. You are a part of America's Jobs Team.
And we're so glad that you're tuning in.
You are in for a good one today. I know I say that often, but I say it because I really mean it. And today is really another gem. I had the chance to talk with Chris Camacho, who is the president and CEO at the Greater Phoenix Economic Council. And he's also one of North America's top 50 economic developers this year. So the Phoenix area has a lot of amazing things going on right now. And Chris lets us peek behind the curtain of the Taiwan semiconductor manufacturing company Megadeal. And he talks a bit about the super cycle of suppliers that this has brought along as well. We talk about his thoughts on the future for his region, inclusive growth opportunities, being both pro-business and pro-people, and why he wakes up ready to roar for the greater Phoenix area day after day. So let's shift over to this interview. Hey, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the America's Jobs Team podcast. I'm Faye Davis, and I am here today with Chris Camacho from Phoenix. Chris, I'm super excited to have you on again. You are a regular guest on our podcast, and this time is, you know, I'm super excited to have you here to talk more about what's going on in Phoenix, and also to celebrate you as one of North America's top 50 economic developers. So let's jump right in. You know, it's been a little while since you've joined us on the podcast, and I do know that there's a ton going on in Phoenix. I was reading some statistics, and I noted that nearly 80% of the jobs that were lost during the pandemic have come back. That is an amazing number. So how has your organization been part of the recovery? You know, what are some of the most exciting recent deals that are helping with this recovery as well?
Yeah, well, certainly, Faye. Thanks for having me today. And excited to tell you a little bit more about Greater Phoenix and what's become of this recovery. I think we were all sitting there in the second quarter of last year with just a significant amount of uncertainty, focused on our own personal health, our family health, our team health. And ultimately, we saw a lot of change. And so I think COVID kicked off a pretty significant, paramount, different, you know, level of thinking required for all of us. And Arizona is a market that's 99% small business. And so as the pandemic hit and, you know, we saw businesses, close for periods of time, for safety reasons, naturally, our market, like many others across the United States, were hit pretty significantly. And so as we saw the advent of the PPP and Congress actually moving pretty nimbly for Congress standards to put together the level of investment available for small businesses, it was very clear to me early on that as the banks were deploying that capital, unfortunately, it wasn't reaching a lot of the micro businesses and minority-owned businesses in our community and many communities nationally. And so yeah, we put together a triage strategy of sorts to help connect to CDFIs, connect to Main Street businesses to get them back on their feet. And that's really historically outside GPEC's scope. But we found we could serve a pivotal role in communications and really adding clarity to how the PPP process worked a year ago. And fortunately, we're back on our feet, as you described, 80% of the way back. And I expect kind of the middle part of 22 to for us to hit full recovery. And you asked about kind of what's been leading that jobs recovery, and obviously small businesses help, but I can tell you that this massive super cycle occurring in semiconductors and advanced electronics globally has led us to Taiwan Semiconductor, and now 44 global companies are evaluating Greater Phoenix for major investments. And the latest I looked at the number, $65 billion of potential capital investment, 12,000 phase one potential jobs. And our goal is to really fortify the Arizona and Metro Phoenix position as the top semiconductor market in the country. And that's what we're unapologetically working to do.
I think that's so awesome. And that, you know, that TSMC deal is just enormous. So can you tell me a little bit more about how you all were involved in that deal?
Yeah. So on those kind of mega projects, there's so much work that goes behind the scenes. I mean, we were in Taiwan back and forth the last 4 years, and yeah, we saw the U.S. administration under President Trump and now President Biden really working to secure the U.S. supply chain. And that starts with defense, the Department of Defense. It starts with chips going into automobiles, chips going into IoT devices. And there's a handful, just a few major companies in that supply chain, TSMC being one of them. So Our work with them, again, started years ago in coordination with Governor Ducey, our state partners, many other organizations, Arizona State University on the engineering side and supply chain side, that led to, I would characterize, a very strong cultural commitment from both sides to ensure that we could help TSMC be successful in the United States. And ultimately, they landed on a site in North Phoenix. There were pretty significant infrastructure upgrades needed because of the size and scale. And fast forward to recent, you know, times, they've broken ground. They're beginning to go vertical on their first couple of phases. Probably one of the more significant projects in the U.S. from a capital investment standpoint. But I would argue more importantly, as we see the United States looking at sourcing these kind of very important critical supply chain nodes and natural resources domestically, this is going to be a generational linchpin for our region and for the country. And so now we're seeing, again, 44 companies around TSMC in everything from chemicals to substrates to packaging and many other aspects of the semiconductor sector now considering Greater Phoenix. And there's other lateral companies in the fab space that are also looking at supporting their fabless customers in the U.S. And so, again, I think we're seeing a renaissance of sorts in semi. And I expect, you know, the next 2 years to determine kind of where the next 20 years are going to go in terms of U.S. semiconductor capacity. And we hope that we're one of those regions, you know, put up there and comes one of the mainstay markets in the United States. And that's really what we're after.
I think that's so cool. And it's such a huge deal. And you talking about 44 additional companies that are joining in on this. That is really amazing, that project flow. Just kind of anecdotally, you know, have they broken ground and when do they expect to be operational?
Yeah, so they've broken ground. There were a number of cranes. If you drive up I-17 and in the 303 corridor, which is our kind of new industrial technology corridor of the future, there's major power infrastructure being extended to the site, water, wastewater capacity up being upgraded, water lines, gas, rail, in and around the vicinity of that site. So it's really like the next generation technology hub of the West. And we worked with them early on, really on this idea of creating a supplier campus. I mean, if anyone on the podcast has been to South Korea or been to Taiwan and see the density of their industrial parks are differently planned than the U.S., where they're very hyper dense. They have government facilities on site that do the on-site permitting, the on-site water, wastewater planning, the architectural, you know, process. I mean, it's a different kind of game overseas than it is in the U.S. with the multi-jurisdictional partners that you need. But with that said, our goal was to build a supplier campus and now multiple supplier campuses in and around the TSMC investment. What that's really driven is global notoriety for the Arizona market. And so companies in energy storage and batteries and EVs, electric vehicles with the new found consumption in the U.S., we're seeing the landscape change, you know, before our eyes. And Greater Phoenix, which historically has been a strong semiconductor market, a top five market historically tied to Intel and their investment starting in 1979. Now I expect over the next 20 years to have 100 plus semiconductor technology companies calling Greater Phoenix home. And again, it changes the entire economic landscape. And what it's done also for, I think, the audience's edification is it's enabled us to work with policymakers at the congressional level, state level, because obviously we need the CHIPS Act support in Washington. We're going to need our state to continue to invest in these levels of infrastructure and talent pipelines of the future. And that's everything from our public university system to the community college network and precision machining and manufacturing to creating academies in the high schools that are really tied to this industry discipline. And so we're really looking at a P-20 strategy on that, or we've deployed a P-20 strategy on that. With these newfound academies. I think it's going to revolutionize the way we think about the future of industrial technology, because I think people often overlook the sheer number of chips that are in a vehicle, for example. The new EVs have 100 plus chips in them. And the shortage that you read about, yeah, it's paramount.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and that's the thing. I think people didn't realize the impact that microchips have on our economy until this started happening, where, you know, we can't get new cars because there's a shortage of chips. Like, there's cars just sitting in these huge parking lots that are drivable, but they're not for consumers because the radios don't work. The navigation doesn't work. Talking between different components doesn't work. So while it's drivable, it's not a consumer product yet.
Yeah, it's amazing it's overused, but smart technology advancement, everything we're doing in the future is going to be smart. And yeah, that advent of IoT devices and virtually everything being connected to the internet, the digital revolution, it's all chip enabled. And yeah. So these embedded systems are critically important to virtually every company out there today. So yeah, that's where the chip demand arises. Now, one other facet I would say that I've been learning about, I'm a student of the semiconductor sector and the chemicals required. It's interesting the geopolitics that have evolved around where these rare earth metals are located, where they're mining for silica, polysilicon, HF globally. You know, I don't think until you dive deep into, again, we just talked about the end state, that chip going into your vehicle or your phone, there's so many steps in that process where you might have 6-7 different countries involved in the production of that chip or that memory product. And so, yeah, this is globally intertwined. And so we're navigating all of these waters now as we're trying to figure out how best to support the U.S. supply chain. And it's incredibly complex, but it's also incredibly diverse globally where these products are sourced from.
And what a cool area for you to expand your knowledge in, right? And what an awesome position for Phoenix to be in. Chris, thank you for sharing that. I think it's super intriguing to me. I want to pivot just a little bit because you are leading a really strong team over there and the organization super strong, and you've had tremendous impact on, you know, what we just were talking about and just the overall landscape of Phoenix's economy. But there's always avenues for growth. So what do you see as, you know, important opportunities for the region in order to keep advancing into a more modern economy?
Yeah, great question. So, you know, we never rest on our laurels. And I had a board meeting yesterday where, first of all, we celebrated Stefan Fergias taking a CEO role in Northeast Indiana. And that's I couldn't be more excited for him and his professional development and next stage. And that's what GPEC's known for well before my time and Barry Broom's time and Rick and Iwana. This is an organization that, you know, is proudly put a lot of national leaders in the game. And I think that's what it's all about. So first we start, you know, with ensuring that we have the right talent disposition for the needs of our community. And second, that the major transition I see or the imperatives that are coming up for all of us is that we're going to have to think differently about the economic paradigm. And so, yes, we're going to focus on catalyst projects and catalyst industries like semiconductors and health IT and digital health and so forth. But we're also going to have to focus on an inclusive economic growth model across all of our regions to ensure that we can expand the innovation capacity, number one, so we have competitive regional economies. But just as important to that is, I believe we need to ensure that we're creating tools and programs that help all, in this case, all Arizonans advance across the prosperity paradigm. And so you're going to hear more about this inclusive economic growth planning across the country. And that's everything from focuses on environmental resiliency in terms of where your baseload generation comes from and how we ensure that we have stable, resilient grids. And obviously, in our case, we're very focused on water and our water future and scarcity management practices. We're also ensuring that, you know, our energy grid is diverse and it's serving our urban and rural populations. And by the same token, you have massive reskilling demands. As I mentioned earlier, this digital revolution and the way that COVID has impacted our schools, we need to ensure that adaptive learning models and new age learning models are deployed across that P-20 system. And so, again, I think the challenge over our next decade is going to be really about putting inclusive economic growth strategies in practice. How do we ensure that as we look at access to capital, we look at urban entrepreneurship, and it's not just about the macro level economic indicators anymore. It's not just about your top level GDP growth or personal income growth or job growth. In my mind, those are important characteristics to overarchingly define a market. But I also think, you know, we need to focus on our Main Street programs. We need to ensure that, you know, our minority-owned businesses, which in Arizona, for example, our Latina businesses, our women-owned Latina businesses are the fastest growing cohort of all startups in our state. And so how are we ensuring that their access to capital, their access to talent is being embraced? In terms of CDFIs, how do we ensure we have more CDFI capacity? So we're able to channel monies into these small businesses, not only for survival through COVID and post-COVID, but for growth and scale so that we're changing the complexion of neighborhoods through entrepreneurship. So I think the gravity of what's before us is more significant than we've ever seen. And so I applaud a lot of these national leaders that are stepping up to the plate. And, you know, it's like taking that 100 mile an hour fastball. You know, it's no longer just your off speed pitches you get every once in a while. This is fastball after fastball with tough locations. And I'll tell you, convening the community and bringing them together, you know, over the last year and a half across, you know, racial and socioeconomic differences, that's really what I see our role becoming in fortifying those strategies that are going to affect change. and openness and access in your community. And so we're dreaming big. And my hope is that over the next 10 years, we'll be one of the most dynamic economies, but most accessible economies for all of our citizens.
I think that's really awesome. And with all of these, you know, dreams and the way that you were just saying the last year and a half have shaped these strategies and the things that do need to be done, I would like to dig a little bit deeper on you personally, because, you know, we've seen so much change over the last 18 months. So how have you seen your own leadership change as a result of everything that's happened, everything your community is demanding of you, all of the growth that you're seeing, you know, and what do you see as your strongest characteristic in your leadership? And how is that playing into your leadership as you are navigating this? I mean, I think we're going to be reading about this time in history, in the history books, you know, our kids as kids as kids are going to be learning about this time. So how are you navigating all that personally?
Yeah, well, I'm a big student of our industry. So I read a lot and really try to get ahead of future trends. And I think a lot about the work we do and you know, whether you argue the success we're having or future we'll have. It's really about our team and our community. So I view personally, my responsibility is set an empirically evidenced approach to how we're going to solve our real challenges. And no longer is it just about selling the market and marketing the region to new customers. It's really about putting yourself in a position to be that leadership voice, your convening agent to address change. And, you know, for some markets that are more mature, that's difficult. For some markets that are emerging, that's also difficult. And I would put us in the position where we're still a young place. You have 70% of the adult populations from somewhere else. You have a melting pot of new ideas and new people constantly. And so with that, you have kind of your mature companies and your young companies. And that meshes into an opportunity that allows, I think, in Greater Phoenix, a new or unique leadership paradigm where someone like me, who's been here now in Arizona for 17 years and have been at the helm here at GPEC for seven, it allows us to not only dream big, as I said, but reputationally set these economic imperatives and then mobilize the market around where these imperatives are. But again, that's nonpartisan, it's apolitical, it's really just about how do we advance the market around an innovation-centered economy, but not losing sight that we need to be inclusive and the practice and strategies needs to lead to better diversification of the economy. In advancing small and big business, which Troy Swope, who's a new board member of mine, is a company called Footprint. And their goal is to end the use of plastics. And one thing he said to me very profoundly a couple of weeks ago was, you know, we can be pro-business, so governments can be pro-business and they can be pro-people, which mm-hmm. sounds so simple. But in this day and age where tribal politics kind of push people to corners, I see personally my role is ideally to be that North Star guiding light that pushes people in a direction that we believe is good for the broader society, but good for the economy. And again, when I use the term unapologetic, is I think you have to have thick skin to want to drive as aggressively as we do. And again, Arizona has been so good to me. So I look at this as an altruistic mindset of I'm going to do my best to wake up every morning and do my best for our community. And I'd say one kind of probably attribute that's been good, and I think Josh and the team would certainly reinforce, is that you have to have a big battery. You have to be able to work. You have to have a charge for the community. And again, I think our team has that. And that's why we've been put in this position.
I think you brought up so many key points, and I really just want to highlight the fact that we do live in a very divisive political climate, and economic developers are, overall speaking, every single one that I have talked to, we want to reach across the aisle and take the best of both parties and let people know that it can be and. It can be a linking of arms for the greater good of businesses and people, because ultimately, the businesses are owned by people. They support people. So I love that you said that about pro-business and pro-people, because it is such a big deal. Chris, I want to end on this one last question. Like you said, you've been in Phoenix for 17 years. You've been at the helm of GPEC for 7 years. So what is it about economic development that keeps you in the game? What keeps you excited? What makes you wake up every single day and say, yes, this is still for me?
Yeah. Well, there's a personal pride, I think, in the challenge of affecting a community. And so you, when I onboard people on our staff, I talk a lot about, you know, having this sense of altruism. There's this gene that we all have that you can't shake. If you want to stay in economic development, you do it because there's purpose. And if anybody's on here that wants to look up, I think something interesting that came across my radar recently is the Blue Zone Project, which is a project that's been deployed in global markets that talks about life expectancy and healthy communities. And there's so many key attributes. There's no one silver bullet solution for a healthy community, but these key ingredients have been tested across the world. What it's opened my eyes, to kind of introspectively evaluate is the fact that, you know, if you're happy coming to work every day, you're happy to be challenged intellectually, you feel like you can affect change through purpose. Those are all ingredients that our team instills in one another. And as excited as I am about, you know, Stefan, you know, moving into the CEO role in Indiana, you know, this organization's had a legacy of producing talent. You know, I talked to our internal team about, you know, we're calling people up. So it's kind of next man or woman up to become a leader. I think there's something about having, you know, humility, but also a chip on your shoulder a little bit about the pride you have for your community and having willingness to work as many hours as we do and as hard as we do. It becomes contagious when you put the right team together. And so one attribute's about talent, but I'd also argue, going back to my Midwestern roots in Quincy, Illinois, is just having grit and tenacity and wanting something more tomorrow than you have today. And that's kind of how we lead and how we build our team every day.
I think that's awesome. And I really can't think of a better way to end this podcast. So Chris, thank you for leaving me with a shot in the arm for economic development. You know, every time we talk to you, I leave with a smile on my face and more energy in my heart to keep doing the work that we do. So thank you for sharing your thoughts and your passion and, you know, all of the awesome things that are going on in Phoenix. And thanks for taking some time to talk with us today.
Well, thanks for all you do and the team does there to celebrate economic developers and economic development. It means a lot to all of our communities and all the leaders nationally. And I'm excited to continue to play a small role and continue to elevate our profession. So thanks for the opportunity.
Anytime. Thanks for sticking with us till the very end. This podcast is sponsored by Research on Investment, Lead Generation for Economic Development, and Gazelle AI. Spend more time closing, less time chasing. Did you like what you heard today? Don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. The America's Jobs Team podcast is audio engineered by Andrea Fuller and produced by Faye Davis.